Hey, Jamie.
Mike?
Hey, you didn't answer my, you didn't respond to my message. I didn't want you to go off to bed and fall asleep.
You know what? I was going to do exactly that. I had gone to talk to my son, and then I was going to sleep because I forgot that we were recording something else.
All right, well, you got enough energy to do it?
I think so.
All right. Well, hey, Jamie.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, we're here to do Better Call Saul on West Coast Project. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing all right, Mike. I am super damn tired, but I'm here.
Doll, truth be told, this is 5 minutes after we just did another podcast, so this is our fake greeting.
Yep, that's correct.
All right, Jamie, this is Better Call Saul 302 Witness.
Yeah, that's right.
Tea at Gus's, I put in my first notes. Is Gus making himself some tea, Jamie? No, it's Chuck.
Yes, it is.
Chuck's happy as a clam at high tide, Jamie. He's singing and whistling. And he's hopefully too early. I want to see this bastard get his comeuppance.
That's correct. He deserves it. I'm about done in with Chuck.
We see some dude playing a solitaire game. By some guy who knows all about the casino methodology, explains to Chuck why the holes are drilled into the deck of cards.
All right, so he says that the casinos drill holes into the cards, or punch them with holes. They can throw away the cards, and people can still use them. Like, people can, you know, pick them up and be like, yeah, man, I got myself a deck of cards from the whatever casino. But they can never bring them back into the casino because they have a hole in them. So then the casino knows that those are, like, you can't, like, bring in a few extra aces or something.
Right.
Yep.
So Chuck shuts this guy down. He's like, okay, it's getting late, pal. Let's turn out the lights. And the light, of course, is the freaking gas Coleman lantern that he's got in this stupid house.
Yeah.
This gloomy-ass house. I do not like Chuck.
I don't either. He needs to go away.
We're going to learn pretty soon this guy's a bodyguard or a private detective, somebody protecting Chuck or ready to witness Jimmy doing something that he shouldn't do.
Yes.
But that takes us right to the credits. We come back from the credits, Jimmy, to the electrical plant. They've been at this plant a couple times. It's kind of their out-of-the-way meeting place for the gangsters, for the nefarious dudes. And somebody there is sitting in the car just doing a search and find one of those word games on those tablets. And it's the gas cap guys, the guys who are fucking with Mike's gas cap tracker thing.
Yep, that's right.
So some dude brings them coffee and just says, stay awake. And Mike observes all this from afar. And we know all about Mike's reverse caper now. He's tracking his gas cap that he swapped out. And he kind of sees it on his tracker, and they go through another very protracted, deliberate scene of Mike tracking this guy.
Right. That's right.
He lets the tracker get to the limits of its range, and we get a little tension, like, ooh, is he going to lose it? Is he going to not be able to find the guy? But he keeps getting it right to the edge of the envelope of the trackability, but finds it again and walks off-road, and... he's in this really cool part of Albuquerque in some hills because the city is down below them with all the lights.
Yeah, that's right.
Jamie, have you ever been to Albuquerque?
No, I haven't, but I got to tell you, that scene, it looked so freaking fake to me. I was really convinced that it was like one of those little like fake model type things that, you know, they build to make it look like it's real, but it's really not. And I was delighted because I did something I don't normally do. I listened to the Insider podcast because of that scene. I was just like, what the hell is this thing? Is it real? Is it fake? What the freak? And I was gratified to hear the Jays talking about it. And they were saying that the Jays, what the hell? Vince and crew.
Gilligan and Gould, yeah.
Yeah, the G's instead of the J's. So it's okay. So to hear the G's talking about it, and they were saying that they were aware that it looked fake. that they had shot it in a particular way. They didn't make it look fake on purpose, but it had something to do with the camera that they used.
Oh, did they say why? Was it intentional?
It was not intentional, but they were aware that it looked like that. And I have to say, like, I know that that is a technique. It's a camera technique that they have that can, that, like, you can go on the internet, and I'll try to find it, and I'll post it on my website. Like there are websites out there that are devoted to that camera technique, because it can make a regular street scene look like a little, like, something that somebody built to look real, but it's not.
Yeah. Yeah, there's super high def Red cameras that are like 4K and ultra high def that make television look fake. It's so perfectly, it almost looks like an animated video game.
Isn't that weird? That's bizarre to me.
Yeah, you'd think the more perfect it was, the more real it would look, but they say it makes it look more fake. It's probably a trick our mind plays, because we're used to seeing, you know, years and years of low def and then movies and stuff on film, and now we got this ultra high digital stuff coming at us, so it's weird.
Right, and I don't think it has as much to do with the definition as it has to do with the kind of exposure of the light.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a weird, I'll find it for you. It's fascinating to see.
But anyway, Albuquerque is a cool place. It's kind of a Wild West place. There's probably a lot of transient people there. And I know, it seemed to me kind of forlorn, like a little bit of poverty crept into it, a little bit more than usual. I'm sure there's really nice places in Albuquerque, but it just seems, it has that kind of transient Wild West feel to it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to make of that place. I never know what to think of it, because I mean, with the exception of flying into like into LAX, or like flying to Hawaii or going to Cabo, I've never been that far west in my life. You know, like I in the continental United States, the contiguous 48, I've never been that far west.
Yeah. Well, L.A. is bustling. L.A. is really bustling. San Francisco is really bustling, modern. You know, people are hustling and, you know, moving quickly and active, and, you know, there's affluence. But some places seem Western and forlorn. And Albuquerque's one. I think Reno is one. Las Vegas, parts of it is like that. It's just like transient people, not kind of down on their luck, not sure what's next in their lives. And they're just kind of living it day by day. Phoenix maybe a little bit like that too, but LA, San Francisco are different. I think they're more energetic than those other places.
Right. Of course. Yeah. And actually I take that back. I've been to San Francisco and Sausalito and all that, but that's pretty much it. Like that, you know, like for me on the West Coast, other than Cabo, I haven't been out there very much. But yeah, of course, you know, I've been to San Francisco because I've seen you in San Francisco.
What? That was you?
That was me.
Wow, well, Mike gets out of his car and walks around because he can't find the signal, and he looks kind of down over the hill, and that's where they have that scene of the Albuquerque Hills. But he sees the coffee delivery guy who brought the coffee to the tracker, gas cap guys, getting something out of a drain or some sort of electrical housing, one of those in-ground plastic kind of housings.
Right, and so wasn't that a guy that we know?
I was trying to think who he was. He wasn't Michael Mando. Nacho.
No,
he's different looking. I couldn't place him.
Yeah, he looked really familiar to me, and I thought that perhaps we knew him from Breaking Bad, but I could be wrong. But then I was really surprised to see that there was somebody else from Breaking Bad.
Oh, there were a few somebody else's.
Yeah.
All right. I just jumped on my page again, so bear with me. I did this in the Americans, where you try to scroll through your notes. I use Apple Notes, and I tried to scroll through the note, but I was actually in the wrong column, and I scrolled through the chapter, all the different chapters of notes I have.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, nobody cares about this, but
I do. I do. As a word person and a writer and somebody who's not familiar with the application that you're using, I'm interested.
It's great because it's universal across all your devices. So you type it on your laptop, it's in your phone, it's in your iPad, it's wherever. So you can type on one thing and then read them back on another.
That's pretty awesome.
I'm sure Windows has that crap too. But. So Mike's walking around, very slow, deliberate scene of him following this dude from the coffee delivery guy. And he goes, after he gets the electrical housing thing, whatever that is, he goes and goes into a drain or a culvert under the road and walks around in there. Mike continues to watch him. Very deliberate scene, very slow, very specifically deliberate and slow, I think. They're making a point to be very casual with the pace of this.
Yeah.
And Mike does this all night, Jamie, up till 7:30 in the morning. And the coffee guy ends up going to some sort of an office building. We can't really tell what it is. And then when he leaves, we see that that building is Pollos Hermanos.
That's right.
Pretty familiar place for us.
Yeah, that was cool because the reveal of the sign was so slow and deliberate. I liked it.
So the next scene was the biggest one to me so far about a link to Breaking Bad. It was Jimmy meeting Francesca.
I loved that.
Francesca, to me, was more important, was more of a pull towards Breaking Bad than Gus.
I agree.
Because we kind of knew Gus was coming. We had all these hints and then the Pollos and all that. But Francesca, man, seeing Jimmy McGill meet Francesca, I mean, look how she saw him as Saul Goodman. And now she sees him as clean-cut Jimmy McGill working with Kim Wexler, and it's all like on the up and up. It's just such a contrast to what she's gonna see.
It really was. And, hearing the G's talk about it, like, it was really cool because they were saying, you know, this is a different character. Like, it's the same actress, but she's really playing somebody else because she is playing Francesca before she has lost her idealism, before she's lost her faith in, in Jimmy. Like, I mean, it's amazing to me that she knew him as Jimmy McGill and that she has this completely different attitude. She's, you know, trying to do a good job and she's, you know, wanting to please him and, you know, taking orders and, you know, it's amazing. Amazing.
Right, trying to pass the interview process.
She's enthusiastic, and even after she gets the job, she's enthusiastic and she's, you know, responsive, and I don't know, it was awesome.
Well, she doesn't have an office full of meth addicted bikers. She has an office full of nice elderly people.
And she's nice. You know, she's not all like pissed off and, you know, trying to squeeze $25,000 out of somebody for a broken door.
Right. So the rainbow is gone from Jimmy and Kim's wall. Jimmy's stenciling over their new logo, the WM.
Yep.
Jim and Kimmy are interviewing people, and Francesca's there for the interview. So this is the crossbreed of the two shows, like I said, that made the strongest pull on me. Francesca worked at the MVD, Jamie, the motor vehicle department, not the DMV, and they have kind of a little comedic couple sentences about this.
Right. Yeah, and I could just see her as an employee of the MDV.
Jimmy tries to drop a trick geezer question on her. Oh, yeah, you get fed up with these old geezers sometimes. And she fields that question really well. She says, well, no, I wouldn't. I'd be polite to them. It's kind of funny.
Well, I mean, that was a good curveball because if she didn't like old people, I mean, so much of the, you know, the law practice there is wills.
Right. It was a pretty obvious fake question, though. I mean, you wouldn't say, oh, yeah, old people, Jesus, I can't stand them. If you're trying to get a job.
Right.
You know, that was funny. I think it was meant to be funny and it kind of came across as funny.
Yeah.
So Kim asks her why she left the MVD, and she says the bureaucracy of it. And boy, is she ever about to enter a non-bureaucratic job with this job with Better Call Saul.
That's right.
With Saul Goodman. Jimmy tries to hire her way too quickly, Jamie. Kim slows it down. But they, in private, they decide to give her a test run. I guess it's kind of a forced. Kim has to do it after he pretty much says, can you start today?
Mm-hmm.
And Francesca puts those sweet DMV skills to work right away. The phone starts ringing very, very soon after she sits down. Yep. And she's good at it, Jamie. She's really good at it. Jimmy's standing there micromanaging over her, and she rolls with it really beautifully. She's good. She's a good receptionist.
That's right.
So one of those calls is from Mr. Ehrmantraut. But he doesn't want any Cracker Barrel small talk like she's pulling on the old people. He wants to talk to Mike.
That's right. And she covers the phone and says he really doesn't want to talk about Cracker Barrel.
So it looks like Mike's buying a new car. Got a car lot. And the guy's like, hey, enjoy your new ride or whatever. He says something about, here's your new car.
I think Mike is constantly getting other cars.
Probably needs to, right, to maintain his cover.
I think so.
And he's calling because he wants an appointment with Jimmy for breakfast, and breakfast at Pollos Hermanos. And now, Jamie, breakfast at Pollos freaking Hermanos? Would you go to a chicken joint for breakfast?
I do it all the time.
Like chicken, though? What do you have for breakfast?
We are in the deep south. We have Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, I guess. And like there's Whataburger in Texas that's really popular for breakfast. But they have like eggs and stuff. I don't know what Pollos Hermanos would have.
Well, Pollos Hermanos probably has breakfast burritos because they're in, you know, Albuquerque. And probably some sort of, you know, I don't know, chicken, egg, something or other. But I'll tell you, Chick-fil-A has an English muffin that has an egg on it and also some grilled chicken. And they have, like, fried chicken biscuits.
Right on. Totally health there, man.
You will die if you eat Chick-fil-A for, like, 6 months in a row. I'm sure it'll kill you.
All right, well, Mike wants Jimmy to go in and watch what Mr. Coffee's doing with the bag he's got over his shoulder. And Jimmy, I don't think, has ever met Gus. I was scanning my memory banks for this. I don't think he ever met Gus in Breaking Bad.
Wait, who?
Jim, or whatever, Saul never met Gus in Breaking Bad.
Well, okay, so I think you're right, but they knew of each other. Like, you know, Saul knew that Gus was a thing, and Gus knew a lot about Saul, but I don't think they were ever in the same room together.
Yeah, Saul knew Gus was a thing, but he didn't know he was Gus. He was the guy who knows a guy who knows a guy.
That's right.
He didn't know who he didn't know, and now he's sitting in his wheelhouse. He walks up, he freaking meets the guy.
That's
crazy.
True.
It's crazy that he's so proximate to him and never even knows in the 8 years of Breaking Bad or seven, whatever, six and a half, that he was that's the guy.
Wow, yeah, that's right.
So Jimmy's sitting and eating in Pollos Hermanos. It just seemed crazy to me to watch him sitting in there and eating his breakfast. But he's not a very good private eye, Jamie. He's looking around like Walt did in Breaking Bad when he was trying to figure out who this important person was at the Pollos Hermanos. He's looking all around, staring at people. Mm-hmm. The Green Scout shows up, and Mr. Coffee comes in with his bag and goes and orders his breakfast. And Jimmy's just awful. He's way too obvious. He actually gets up and moves his tray closer to the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy, man. You can't do that shit. You know, Gus is in the background here. We see him for the first time kind of in the background. He has to be crystal clear about this Jimmy surveilling this guy, I think.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I mean, Roman just threw the garbage can, and he finds his watch. So he did something smart by dropping his watch in there.
Well, yeah, and he did that last second because I think he did it as soon as when he heard somebody behind him say, can I help you?
So he slipped his watch off with quick movement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's
pretty
right.
Clever, pretty smart. I'm still more fascinated by Francesca than Gus, but
I agree.
Gus is back.
He is.
So Jimmy goes outside, reports all these actions to Mike, or what the guy ate, who he spoke to, and where he set the knapsack down between his feet. And Jimmy wants some adventures, Jamie. He wants to James Bond it around a little bit with Mike, but Mike's really tired of him and tells him to get the hell out.
Mm-hmm. And plus, Mike works alone.
And Gus hears Jimmy drive off, and he just has that look on his face. He knows something's up.
Yep.
All right, Mike's back again, noting all the cars and license plates. I guess meaning like the next day or later that day, he's writing down all the license plates of all the cars from the dead end street across from the Pollos Hermanos.
Yeah, he's trying to do his detective work.
So an SUV drives up, Jamie. It's another old face, Victor.
That's right. That one was a big deal for me.
How come?
Well, because, Victor met a grisly end. And, that was like that was probably the grisliest death, except for Gus, on Breaking Bad. And to just see dude, like, just driving around, like, hey, things are cool. I don't realize in 6 years things are going to be really bad.
Well, they made it look like Mike followed Victor, so somehow he recognized the importance of that black SUV, and he follows Victor.
Yeah, because the way he pulled in, it was almost like he was there to pick something up, because he pulled in and then backed up and then drove real close to the building and then backed up again and then pulled out.
Yeah, I don't think it was the gas cap tracker. I think he just saw this guy in this SUV and thought, this is a guy I should follow. I think the gas cap caper is over with the Pollos. That's what got him to Pollos Hermanos.
No. Mm-mm. There's a little bit more to it.
All right, well, you can point it out when we get to it. I thought that was the reason he got to Pollos.
Okay.
So the next scene, the bright blue Mitsubishi with Ernie going over to Jimmy and Kim's office. And the office is now busy with clients. It's packed with people. But Ernie can't go in. He calls and says he can't go in. Kim comes out. And Ernie is apparently wary of Jimmy seeing him because of HHM finding out about it.
Yeah, and he's playing exactly into Chuck's hands, doing exactly what Chuck wanted for him to do.
He's also not very logical here. He's maybe just nervous, but
he is.
He tells Kim he's worried that if HHM finds out that he's told Jimmy stuff directly, he'll get in trouble, and it's better if he filters it through Kim. So I guess that makes sense. But then he says, I can't call you, but he just had called her to come out.
Right. So he was nervous. He was afraid and wasn't thinking straight. And so put himself and everybody else in a bad position.
So back inside, Jimmy says goodbye to his clients, and Kim kind of catches him privately and makes him pay her. It's like Saul did with Jesse and Walt to get the lawyer-client privilege going.
That's right. Give me a dollar.
And she now knows about Chuck's tape, and she tells Jimmy. So she knows about the 1261 address change to 1216, and that's what got her the deal with Mesa Verde.
Mm-hmm. And that's right.
And she offers, it's interesting that she offers to check it out and help Jimmy. She's not that angry with him. She wants to help him.
Yeah, and I think that's really where Kim's fall comes. She's far too willing to do this under the table type stuff. And that's, to me, like, she shouldn't be. And I know that's like, armchair quarterbacking, and that, everybody in the world was mad at Skylar because Skylar always stood up for what was right. And so it's kind of, unfair to then, expect for Kim to always stand up for what's right when we, as an audience, a larger audience, dislike Skylar for being so strong. So here we have somebody who's willing to be morally compromised in order to be on the side of her man, and we're still not satisfied with it. But I didn't like that she went along with him.
Yeah, so Jimmy continues his day and closes the doors for the day. Thanks, Francesca, for doing a good job. Jimmy, did you like the logo? Jimmy says it's morning over the sangrias, the W and M being mountain peaks and the blue and orange underneath it.
Yeah, I thought it was all right. I felt like, you know, it could have been better, but it's all right.
It looked good when he pulled the masking tape off and it was better defined and, you know, looked finished. I actually liked it. Maybe I needed to hear what it was before I started liking it, that it did actually look like a mountain range with sunset and stuff, or sky, well, whatever.
I don't know, because it looked exactly like that to me, even when the tape was on there. Like, in the earlier scenes, it looked like a mural, almost, you know, like a mountain with sky behind it. I really totally got it. And I'll tell you something else I thought was really cool was in the ceiling. I don't know if you noticed, the ceiling in that place is mirrored.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
So the ceiling in there is mirrored. And if you look at the ceiling, it looks like it's McGill Wexler instead of Wexler McGill, because it's reflecting backward.
Interesting. I didn't catch that.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
So Kim gets on the phone with her professor, and she finds out that New Mexico is a one-party consent state, so the recording that Chuck has is actually legal. And she starts talking strategy and options that Jimmy has. Well, Jimmy takes off the masking tape with the Chuck technique, the roll it with your thumbs technique.
Yep.
That's creepy.
And he's trying to do it, and then finally...
Finally what?
Finally he can't, like, he realizes after Kim talks to him and tells him what's going on with Chuck, he's still trying to roll it, and then he gets, like, really freaking mad, and then he just yanks off the tape, and then it messes up the paint job, and he storms off.
So Kim, it's interesting to me that Kim's wondering more what Chuck is going to do. Like, is he going to go to Kevin at Mesa Verde? Should we just wait it out? Is he going to wait it out? She seems more concerned with Chuck than the repercussions of, like, Jimmy, you know, what Jimmy did here. I don't know. I think she should be more angry with Jimmy, and she should be severing ties with Jimmy.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like, that should be the case. But then I think the audience would be mad at her. So I don't know. I mean, it's complex, but I don't know. She, you know, she's being a good girlfriend. She's trying to help him.
Yeah, but almost too much. I don't know. I'm wondering what's going to happen to poor Kim not being around at all in Breaking Bad. And it's not like she's just going to be mad at Jimmy. I think something really bad's going to happen with Kim.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I hope that she's okay, you know, but who knows?
He's done everything as bad as he could possibly do it to wreck her career and compromise her career. I mean, what else is he going to... They're running out of time for Jimmy to mess her up more with her career. So if he does this stuff, he does stuff as bad as this and she still wants to help him, something bad has to happen to her to sever her connection with Jimmy.
Yeah, I guess.
It's not being fed up. It's like being bumped off or something.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I don't know, man.
All right, Mike does more tracking. He looks over a hill in the distance and sees this two-lane road drifting off into the distance, and he sees the phone in the gas cap with his binoculars. And he's been out at Jamie. The phone rings, and he picks it up and just says, yeah.
Yes, and that's why I was telling you, like, I think that there was a little bit more to it, because... that's where the gas cap is. You know, they're like, we're going to lead you by the nose. And I think that that just about killed Mike, because Mike is accustomed to being the one who, you know, who holds, you know, the surprise, like the ace in his hand. He's always got that little bit of magic in his pocket. And for the first time, I think Mike has been, you know, he's had countermeasures taken against him.
Well, I agree with that. I agree that that's the gas cap again, but I think the role of the gas cap was to get Mike to Poyos, and when Mike went there with Jimmy, and especially Jimmy bumbling through it, that's how Gus found out that he's been tracked down into Poyos. So he probably said to his cronies, take this friggin' thing out in the road and put the phone on it, and we'll let him know that we know about him. I don't think that gas cap was supposed to lead us to anything beyond Poyos, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't. What? But didn't he follow? That's what the gas, like, that's how he got out there to where that the phone was in the gas cap, right? Because the gas cap had the tracker in it. Like, he was still following it. And that's
right,
how he.
But that's nowhere. That's just Gus leading him off, like, okay, I'm going to send you out in the middle of freaking nowhere and tell you that I know I'm onto you.
I see what you're saying. Okay, so you're saying, like, for the purposes of the story, like, how the, like, where that would have gone originally, it would have brought him to Poyos. But,
right.
Okay, yeah, I get that.
Yeah,
okay.
There's no secret hideout in a mountain somewhere. You know, that it's served its purpose. It's got him to Poyos.
Right.
All right, Howard pulls up in his Jaguar back in some nice-looking neighborhood in Albuquerque, and he sneaks around a few houses, climbs walls, gets to Chuck's back door. And we see this bodyguard. We learn now more about this solitaire-playing dude. This guy's name is David. He's a bodyguard. And Chuck answers the door, the back door, makes Howard remove his phone and his keys and makes him hide them. Freaking Chuck, man. I don't know what I hope happens to him, but I'm sick of him.
Yeah, I'm tired of Chuck, too.
Howard is pissed. Maybe this is good. Howard's pissed at all this bullshit. The private investigator, the cost, the effort. I think he's kind of pissed at the ridiculous of it. He's climbing over walls and shit.
Yeah.
He wants a better strategy. He wants an alternate strategy.
Yeah. And he's like, yeah, dude, get over yourself and stop with your little caper. And, you know, this is enough.
Well, this situation kind of solves itself because Jimmy shows up and blows everything. He knocks on the door. Howard says, go away. Or Chuck, I mean, is it Chuck or Howard? Chuck, I think, says, go away. Mm-hmm. Jimmy kicks the door in, says, you tape me, you asshole. No wonder Rebecca left you. He's, like, insulting him left and right. And he ransacks the place in front of all these witnesses.
Yep.
So Howard and David, the private eye, kind of wait behind the wall and let him hang himself a little bit more. And Jimmy finds the tape or a tape, a cassette tape, and holds it up and says, for this, you destroyed our family, and makes threats to burn down the whole house. And he pretty much buries himself with witnesses in front of these witnesses. So Howard and David step out from behind the wall. Chuck calls them ideal first person witnesses, and the clock ticks down and the episode ends.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think that's going to leave? How's that going to leave us with Chuck and Jimmy?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know, because that was the stupidest thing Jimmy's ever done. It was just so stupid. And, I guess it's this has probably destroyed their relationship. And particularly if something real comes of that manipulation, then I think Jimmy's going to be done with Chuck.
Yeah, but, I mean, Jimmy's already been kind of done with Chuck. I mean, who do we care about here? I don't care about Chuck. I don't care really about Howard. I don't care if Chuck and Howard are falling out. I don't care if Chuck and Howard get in bed together. I don't really care about Jimmy and Chuck either, Jamie. I guess what I care about is Kim. You know, maybe there's something here that's going to lead to Kim's demise.
Yeah, well, I don't know about demise, but I think that, you know, she may end up in prison. I'm with you. I need Chuck to go away.
All right, well, that's it for 302 Witness. So what do you think, what was the witness? The witness of them catching Jimmy being mean to Chuck, I guess, huh?
Yeah, I think so.
Number 303 next week is Sunk Costs. Did you hear anything about that on the Better Watch Saul or whatever they call it?
No. I don't think they're doing that every week. I think they're only doing, like, the season opener and the season closer.
Really? I think they have Watching Saul every week, don't they, with what's his name?
I can't think of that guy's name right now. But I know last year and the year before, it was only the first and the last.
Chris Hardwick. I got tired of that guy with Walking Dead, so I don't watch his Saul. I haven't watched too many of his Sauls. But 303 Sunk Costs. Jamie, how do people reach you before Sunk Costs if they have anything they want to say to you?
I am on Twitter. I'm at Word Girly. And I have a website called wishisaidthatshit.com.
All right. And I have a website called West Coast Project. And my Twitter is scathing at scathing tweets. And we also do Fargo and we do The Americans and a whole bunch of other cool stuff. And Jamie, we are tired. It's late. And this is our second podcast after starting our podcast night tired.
That's true.
I hope we came through with some energy, though. I think we had some good points.
I think so, too.
All right, Jamie. Well, I will see you next week on Sunk Costs.
Awesome, Mike.
Talk to you then.
Bye.
Bye.